Welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us as the holiday shows continue. We did a couple last week. We did a couple the week before that. So we're well into the holiday season of shows. One of the most important and well-known shows that goes on every year is the Kansas City Ballet production of The Nutcracker. They've done it for many years now. I'm going to ask one of my guests if she knows how long, because she's probably been in quite a few of them. Kimberly Cowan is with us. She is now retired, but she was a dancer for many years with the Kansas City Ballet. She is now the Kansas City Ballet Upper School Principal. Ever get sent to the principal's office? No? And the Kansas City Youth Ballet Director. Also, she coaches. She's one of the children's ballet coaches, along with that. And Poppy Treadle is with us as well. She is one of the Nutcracker principal dancers. She dances the role of Clara. Welcome to the show again. This is probably your first interview. You're probably going to say no, you've done a bunch. Say it out loud and say it into the microphone.
Yes, it is my first.
You're your first? Okay, I hope we'll make it an enjoyable one for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's turn to Kim first. How many years now the Kansas City Ballet has done the Nutcracker?
Well, this is our 60th anniversary.
Wow.
So we've been doing it for quite a few years now. It's a tradition in every city across America. And it's kind of that special time of year when all of the dancers get to come together and spend time with students in the school and families in our community and just celebrate the holidays.
Well, sure. Now, you danced in it as well. Tell the folks the part that you danced and how many times you did the ballet.
Well, I was in the Kansas City Ballet's production of The Nutcracker for 20 years. I'm pretty sure I danced every role except for Clara's mother. I was never the doll in the first act. I think that's it. I think I danced every other role in The Nutcracker.
So you're well-versed in talking about the show.
Oh, definitely. But every ballet dancer is. The Nutcracker is in all of our lives if you're a ballet dancer. So it just becomes part of who you are.
This is probably undoubtedly the longest running show that the ballet does all year. It opens on
December 7th.
It opens on December 7th and runs through the 24th. And all of the performances are at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. But it's a long run, and it's wearing. Was it wearing for you as a performer, Kim?
Yes and no. It's day in and day out. Sometimes you're doing two performances in one day. You might do eight performances in one week. It's pretty taxing on your body. You have to eat really well. You have to get plenty of rest. But at the same time, it's also what dancers want to be doing, is performing. So to have that opportunity to dance some of these roles multiple times in a month's time, it gives you a chance to really grow as an artist, and your nerves start to shift as the run goes on. You know, that first weekend, everybody has lots of nerves, everything has to be perfect. And then once you start getting more comfortable with being on the stage, by the end of the month, you can go out there and relax a little bit more and really start to make strides as an artist. So it's both. It's hard, but it's also very rewarding in the end.
Last year, Mr. Carney told me that a lot of the roles are double cast. Now, when you danced it, did you dance every day? Did you often have a little time off? People wanted to see you because you were one of the principal performers. She was one of the important dancers with the ballet.
We were all pretty much always in the show. You might have a show where you didn't dance quite as much, maybe a role that was a little bit less stressful, but everyone still always had stage time. And we just rotated so that you would get maybe a little bit of break here and there. But I don't even think I ever had a show off.
Wow.
I might have had an act off, but not a show.
In 20 years. That's a long time. So the show will open on December 7th and run through the 24th. It's filled with young people. Poppy here is one of those people. You dance the role of Clara. That's one of the important parts in this show. How were you chosen for this? Are you exceptionally good?
I guess so.
Okay, you guess so. I guess that was kind of a loaded
question.
I can
say she's definitely exceptionally good.
Thank you.
Yeah, have you worked really hard at doing this?
Yes, I have.
When did you start? Well, how old are you now? You're not supposed to ask women their age, but I think in your case.
I just turned 12 years old.
12 years old. And how long have you been dancing?
Since I was 2.
Since you were 2. So 10 years already. Yeah. So I guess you're probably ready for this part.
Yeah.
In past years, have you danced any of the more minor roles in the show?
I've been the bunny and a party girl before, and a Paula Chanel.
How did they get you ready to do this? Is it a grueling process? Do they work you pretty hard?
Well, being able to perform a different role before Claire was a good thing because you get the experience for a smaller role before you perform. It is pretty hard. There are some late nights, but it's all worth it.
I'll bet. So what's the hardest thing about performing this particular part?
Well, you're on stage the whole time, mm-hmm. So you never get a break very often, but it's really fun.
Do the children... We're going to talk about the school because of your involvement with the school, but do they work their way up, so to speak? Is that a fair way to characterize it?
Definitely. We hold our auditions every year based on the levels of the school. And so certain roles are for certain levels. And as Poppy mentioned, she had roles before Clara that kind of helped build her up to where she is today. And, you know, each with varying amount of different skills, the amount of stage time. And like she said, now she's on stage throughout the entire ballet. So it's a big responsibility and one that Mr. Carney wants these young girls to understand, you know, what a special experience this is for them and how they can really help all the other students that are participating in the show understand how important it is, that we're trying to inspire people and share the holiday spirit with families, and we have to take that very seriously because no one wants to leave feeling sad after going to the Nutcracker.
Oh, no. There's a lot of special things that go on in connection with the show. Is it a luncheon?
Yes, the school has an annual fundraiser called the Sugar Plum Fairy Children's Ball. That happens on this year. It's on Saturday, December 9th, and it happens in the morning before the Nutcracker performance. So many families attend that in the morning, and then they come see the Nutcracker. In past years, that's been the opening performance of the Nutcracker, but this year we're opening on a Thursday. So. That will still happen on the Saturday, the very first Saturday.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask Kimberly the story of the Nutcracker, because there are some people that don't know that. I know you do, Poppy, because you've done it so many times. And then when we get to Clara's part, I would like you to comment, if you would, on how Clara fits into the story. And Kim, what is the basic story of the Nutcracker?
The beginning of Mr. Carney's version, the curtain goes up, and Drosselmeyer, who is Clara's godfather, he is in his workshop, and he is preparing gifts to bring to Clara's family's annual Christmas party. And you see him taking these life-size dolls, the Nutcracker, a bear, a Harlequin couple. And he's making them small so they'll fit in packages. And he then later arrives at Clara's house with these packages and transforms them into, again, life-size packages, and shares these wonderful toys with Clara and her cousins and her friends. And she, of course, Clara has a really sassy little brother. He's always getting in trouble. His name is Fritz. And Drosselmeyer has saved the Nutcracker for Clara. It's a very special gift that he gives to her. And unfortunately, her brother breaks the Nutcracker.
Uh-oh.
Yes, it's very, very tragic. This is one of Clara's very sad moments. But Drosselmeyer fixes it, which is wonderful. He takes really good care of it, adds a little magic to it so that it's operating at full capacity again. Later that night, after all the guests have left the Christmas party, Clara comes downstairs looking for her Nutcracker because she doesn't want to be without it, and she falls asleep on the couch. And she then goes into a dream that Drosselmeyer is concocting the whole dream. He's making all this happen for her. He transforms her living room into this ginormous space with a huge couch. It's bigger than she is. Big chair that she gets to ride around on, and all these big mice appear in her living room. Fortunately, they're kind of funny, so she's not that afraid of them. And there's little mice as well, and the Nutcracker comes to life. And he brings with him a whole army of soldiers, and they fight off these mice. And of course, the mice have to have a leader, so that's the big Mouse King. And Clara helps the Nutcracker because she gets really, really scared at one point. She starts to think, oh my gosh, the Nutcracker is not going to make it. And so she takes off her ballet slipper and she throws it at the Mouse King to distract him. And he turns around to see, you know, where that came from, and the Nutcracker stabs the Mouse King. At that point, Drosselmeyer does a little bit more magic, and he turns the Nutcracker into a prince. And this is really magical for Clara. She can't even believe this, that, you know, her doll is now this prince standing next to her, and he gives her this beautiful crown, and he bows to her, and they dance their way through the forest with the beautiful snow coming down, and there are snowflakes all around them. They get to ride off in a beautiful sleigh pulled by reindeer. You know, you would think that that's special enough, but Drosselmeyer says no. Clara has to go to the Kingdom of the Sweets, and they get in a big, beautiful hot air balloon, and they fly to the Kingdom of the Sweets. When they arrive there, they're met by the Sugar Plum Fairy and her cavalier and all of her attendants at the Kingdom of the Sweets, and they all perform dances for her. They come from different countries and represent different yummy treats that they share with Clara and the prince. And they're entertained, and it's marvelous. It's really just more than any girl could ever dream of. And then, of course, you know, she has to wake up at some point. But we like to end our version with her still in dreamland. So it's really, really a wonderful story for children. And it's especially a wonderful story for Clara. It's really all about her.
Yeah, it's all about you, Poppy. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that? As Clara, how do you get into the role? Are you one of these performers who, like Dustin Hoffman and ones like that? You know, they get into the part really deeply. How do you do it?
I think that probably, you know, when you think about it, you've probably been dreaming about being Clara for a while. Yeah. I mean, almost all little girls who are in ballet dream about being Clara. So I would think, in a way, all she has to do is think about how special this is, that she's getting a chance to be Clara, and that automatically puts you in the right frame of mind to be in the middle of this magical story, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah, you have kind of a dual responsibility. You have to dance in the show, and you also have to act in the show.
Yeah.
And a lot of is it the story? Which is more difficult?
I feel like the dancing is probably easier.
Okay. That's kind of what I would figure, too. But, you know, there are times when you're scared. There's time when you're excited. There's times when you're probably mad at your brother.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me about how you've been. You started when you were two. Did you take classes right away?
Well, for the first year, I did not like it very much.
You didn't.
I would just sit outside and watch. But then I joined the Kansas City Ballet School, and I have been dancing ever since.
What was the turning point? Was there a particular dance, a particular part? What was it that changed your mind?
I don't know. I just loved the school much more than where I had been
before.
Because
of the teachers, maybe?
Yes.
Like Kim, for instance? Kim
yes.
was performing when you first started. Did you admire her?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. What was the first show that you were in? Do you recall?
I think the Nutcracker.
Were you? do most of the children end up in the Nutcracker, even if it's a very small part, Kim?
I mean, we hold these auditions every year, and all of the students who perform in the Nutcracker, they have to be students in our school, and we have, there are 206 roles for children. So, yes, unfortunately, there are some maybe each year who aren't in it, but we are able to get quite a few young dancers into the show, and I think what's really special about this particular production is that there are a lot of parts for the children, and they get to dance a lot in those parts. I feel like at every level there's always something to look forward to, that you get, you know, that next step. We even have our oldest students actually dance on point, which is wonderful, and they get to dance on stage with the company members in the finale. So that's really a big accomplishment for our older students.
Well, I think so. Now, Kim, of course, as well as being a dancer who danced in the show many times, which probably affects the way she teaches. She is one of the children's ballet coaches, as well as the upper school principal and Kansas City Youth Ballet director. Now, how do all these intersect for you as far as perhaps doing this show and other shows during the year?
Well, it's actually interesting. With the school, I tend to work with the older students. But in this production of The Nutcracker, a lot of the roles that I work on are for younger students. So it gives me an opportunity to really get to know our entire student body. And I think it's helpful that there's another children's ballet coach, Rachel Nye. The two of us work together on all the children's roles, and we both work for the school. And I think it really helps the process, because we work with kids on a regular basis, we understand how to reach them, how to get the points across on their level so that they can integrate with the professional company. And knowing the students ahead of time really helps that process along.
Is there a certain level when they first begin that you like them to be at? Do you recognize talent right away, or does it take time to develop? Poppy said that she mostly sat and watched for a while.
Well, I would say probably at 2. Maybe we wouldn't have known for sure about Poppy's future. But I bet you, gosh, I mean, by the time she was 7, it becomes pretty clear that there's something really special going on there.
As you watch them, is it the way they move? Can they catch on to the steps? What is it you look for?
Well, I think that that's a little bit of a personal decision, but it also can be very universal. I mean, it's very, very rare that two people would disagree on whether or not a student or dancer is talented and has a future. But the things that you're drawn to might be different. For Poppy, she has very solid technique. She's very tidy, but she also has just kind of this little magic glow, that she's very sweet and charming when she's dancing and very gracious. And that kind of poise at a young age is rare.
Do you get frustrated, Poppy, sometimes?
Not really.
Not really? Especially when they have you do it for the third or fourth time?
No.
No, you don't? You seem like mentally you're very well suited for this.
Yeah.
You participated in the Youth America Grand Prix. Tell me about what that was like.
It was awesome. I really enjoy performing, so it was a great experience to perform on point on a stage also.
Where was this at?
I performed in Chicago and New York City.
In New York City.
Can you tell them how you ended up in New York City?
I placed high enough to exceed to the finals.
Did you do a prepared routine? Did people here in Kansas City help you prepare a routine that you took to Chicago and New York?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us about it? Is it from any one particular ballet?
I did Cupid Variation from Don Quixote.
Okay.
And I did Bluebird Pas de Deux. And I also did a contemporary.
So. All three of those sound difficult.
Yes.
To me. How much time were you able to put into it to perfect it?
We started about 9 months before, so.
Well, that's a very stiff competition where you went, especially when you got to New York. So were you nervous about that?
A little.
What did they do to calm you down and get you ready for it? Don't tell me you went out partying.
It's her secret. No.
That would be very undaunting. I'd have to take my time and really prepare and go over and over and over something I was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you did too.
That's one of the really special things about this particular competition is, since they started working on it 9 months ahead of time, you know, you hope that at that point you have a lot of muscle memory going for you, mm-hmm. and that you've done it enough times that you know where all the places where you could mess up, and you also know all the places where you can really excel, and just trusting that that process is going to work for you, and being able to calm your nerves. That's probably one of the hardest things as a performer, is being able to handle that level of pressure. And Poppy really did a wonderful job and represented the Kansas City Ballet School very well.
And all that has brought you to where you are right now, dancing the role of Clara in the annual Kansas City Ballet production of The Nutcracker. It opens on December the 7th and runs through the 24th. If you want a particular schedule on that, I suggest going to their website, kcballet.org. There is also a box office number to call, 816-931-8993. And they'll be doing quite a few performances. Do you know how many you'll be doing? You're double cast as Clara, so you don't have to do every show.
Yes, I will be performing in seven.
Seven times? That's still a lot. When you think of the people watching this, especially the people who have never seen The Nutcracker before, do you feel the pressure on them?
A little, but I think I'll be fine.
You think you can do it? Yeah. We pulled you out of rehearsal to do this. Do you have a lot of more work to do, or do you feel like you're almost ready?
I think I'm almost ready.
Okay, well, do you think she is too?
I think she's ready.
Okay. Starts on December 7th and will run through the 24th. It's a long run. Now, what's the most fun? Is wearing the costumes one of the more fun things other than the dancing?
Yes.
Clara has some really beautiful costumes. She's very lucky. And, I mean, our production is only a couple years old, so they're all still really new and very sparkly.
That has to be exciting for you, especially at such a young age. Do you want to go on to dance for a long time with here in Kansas City or otherwise?
Yes.
It's going to be hard work. You know that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just want to make sure you're ready. I'm sure you do. How many children, or overall, how many dancers are in the show? It always looks like such a big cast when you sit in the audience and watch.
Well, in one cast, we have, I guess it's 102 roles. For the children, and then our company of dancers, I believe, is at 36 dancers now. Wow. So we really have a large cast, and it's pretty exciting, all that hustle and bustle backstage, and the students getting to interact with the company dancers. And yeah, it's a pretty special time of year.
Yeah, I'm sure you were nervous at times when you danced, but in the role you have now, are you nervous for other reasons?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There's only so much you can do for them, and then it's up to them, and you just hope and cross your fingers. Oh, I hope it all goes well. And the places that maybe they've struggled with, or the hard parts, and you just you can't wait to pass through those to be like, oh, they did it, they did it.
It's a holiday tradition. It's been going on a long time. As Kim mentioned, a year or so ago, it was last year when they did the new costumes and the new choreography. And
this will actually be our third
year.
The
third? Okay. Yeah, time passes so fast.
Believe me. I know.
So essentially, they had to learn different than what it was before.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, different from when you danced the part as well. Mm-hmm. So you're still seeing something new, and it will open on December the 7th and run through the 24th. All the performances are at the Kauffman Center, the beautiful building just south of downtown. The number to call for more information is 931-8993 with an 816 in front of that if you happen to live on the Kansas side. So 816-931-8993, or online, where I know they have a lot of pictures. Saw everyone's picture on there, kcballet.org. It's just about time now, Poppy. I asked you before, are you ready? You sure you're ready?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Sound like you could do it right now, and probably be perfect as well. But you still have to do all the rehearsals. Thanks so much for being with us. Kimberly Cowan is with us. She danced for, did you tell us, 20 years?
Was 20 longer? Years, yes.
20 years. Did that wear on you after a while? Did you have? That's my way of saying, did you have any injuries? I know dancers tell me they do.
I was actually very fortunate. My first year when I moved to Kansas City to dance, I had a stress fracture in my foot.
Oh, wow.
And I really think that was just getting used to the amount of dancing I was doing at a young age. And then I had, some tendonitis here and there, but nothing that really took me out of it until the year before my last year, I broke my foot.
Oh.
And so, I mean, really, 19 years span there, that was pretty good without having anything that would take me out of performing. I only missed one set of performances that first year and then one set of performances when I broke my foot. So, I mean, I feel fortunate that over all those years, I held up pretty good. And so far, so good.
Okay.
We'll see as I get older.
Kim is the ballet upper school principal, as well as the youth ballet director, and also a children's ballet coach. So she's probably kept busier than she was then. But she's not.
More things to think about, for sure.
That's it. Thank you for being here. And Poppy Treadle, one of the principals. You dance the role of Clara. Thanks so much for being with us, making your interview debut.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, when you come back, when you've got a bigger role, and we'll talk about that, all right? Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having
me. Oh, it's my pleasure. I like meeting all the people. It's very exciting for me. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a brief break. When we return, we have much more to tell you about. We're going to talk about the Barn Players Annual 6x10 Play Festival. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to talk about an event that comes around every year. More and more local theater groups are letting playwrights have their say. There's a process. They have to submit a script. We'll get into all of that. But several of the theaters have been doing it. One of the theaters who has been doing it the longest is the Barn Players, still currently of Mission, Kansas, although that may change coming up very soon. But the Barn Players in Mission, Kansas, they have an annual 6x10 play festival. And here to tell us all about it is the assistant artistic producer over at the Barn. He's also a member of the board and on the committee that helps pick those plays. His name is Lynn Reddick. Welcome, Lynn. Thank you so much for being here. Lean on in close to the mic.
And glad to be here.
We're going to listen, and we're going to hear anyway, about the 6x10 Playwright Festival. Now, the 6 is the number of plays, and 10
right.
means it can't be any longer than 10 minutes.
10 minutes long. So we always tell people, if you don't like the play you're watching, just wait 10 minutes. Another one's coming along.
How often does that come into play? You know, do people say, oh, I didn't like that one, but I stuck around.
What's actually funny is that what I love about it is that afterwards I talk to audience members, and it's interesting to see everybody has a different favorite. And so one person will tell you, oh, I love that first one. I hated the last one. And then the very next person you talk to says, love the first, you know, hated the first one, loved the last one. So it happens more. People have very different reactions. We try to get a really good mix of shows, funny, serious, a little controversial. So people definitely have their favorites.
Now, we used to have a psychic show here on the radio station. They've kind of retired, basically. There was no need for them to, but they did. But one year, there was a play about a psychic on there.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the psychics here at the station asked me, says, are you going to this? I said, yes, I am. He says, tell us what happens during this. Are they knocking the psychic? And they really didn't knock the psychics
no,
at all.
I remember that show.
It was all in good humor,
yeah.
I thought. But this is the kind of thing you like, people expressing themselves.
Right, right. And so the other part that's interesting is we let the 6 directors, there's a different director for every show, and we let the 6 directors read all 6 plays and then rank which ones they want to do from 1 to 6. And that's always, again, the same process where one director's number 1 is the next director's number 6 and so on. So, you know, live theater. Everyone has their own taste.
And we work our way down to 6 plays. Now, that must be hard. How many submissions do you get over the course of a year?
This year, we got about 50 submissions. We had a good year. That was more than some years. And it's open to all playwrights who live within 250 miles of Kansas City. But the vast majority, I'd say 80%, are people that are right here in Kansas City. And we have a committee of 3 people. And we read all 50 plays, which even at 10 minutes takes a long time. They're blind readings. We don't know who wrote them because a lot of times it's playwrights we know that we've done before or people we know. And we read all 50 plays, and then all 3 of us rank them. We narrow it down to 6.
You could have had a famous playwright write one of those plays, all read it, And who knows? You might not even have picked it.
I know. And we have playwrights. It's funny. We have playwrights that we'll pick for a couple of years in a row, and then the next year we don't pick them. You know, it didn't tickle our fancy that year, I guess. So,
yeah. For people who are interested, if this has sparked their fancy, they've written some plays maybe and haven't had it published or performed anywhere, I believe that's probably one of the rules, right?
Yeah.
How does one get involved in this? I'm sure there is a submission deadline.
There is. It's generally August 31st. And we start soliciting submissions around the 1st of June, and we send out a press release and send out emails, and then we wait for the submissions to come in. And playwrights, being artistic folks, generally we panic until about a week and a half before the deadline, and then all of a sudden they come flowing in, and we end up with a lot. But we always have a little bit of a panic time there because I guess playwrights are natural procrastinators.
So. Or they're waiting to the last minute to put the finishing touches on. Yeah. Says, what can I add that will get me picked?
That's right. It could be.
Have you ever had a play performed in 6x10 form that went on to become a regular show?
We've had some that were expanded into one acts. We've had that happen several times, and usually it's done at the Fringe or Fringe Festival or somewhere like that. But yeah, there's some that clearly could be expanded, and some of them are perfect just at 10 minutes and more.
The action starts this Friday, December the 8th at 7:30 p.m. Performances continue then on Saturday the 9th of December, also at 7:30 p.m. A special matinee presentation on Sunday the 10th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Barn Players Facility, currently now at 6219 Martway in Mission, Kansas, where they've been for 14 years. That's where you can go on that date. The number to call for more information, and bear in mind, no one is there to answer the phone 24 hours a day, so you may have to wait for someone to get back to you. But the number is 913-432-9100 or online at thebarnplayers.org. So time is coming up to see the shows, and let's talk about those shows. You picked six of them. There are probably special reasons why each one was picked, and you also picked a director to pick each one.
Right, and we usually try to even out and do three dramas and three comedies. That's not a requirement. If it doesn't work out that way, it doesn't work out that way. We try to pick shows that have as a diverse cast as possible. Again, that's not always possible because we get what we get based on what gets submitted. So, and we try to get shows that a lot of our directors, this is their first or second or third time directing. We have a few that are old pros, but we have a few that are new as well. So that's another point of the festival, is to help new directors get their feet wet on something that's a relatively short quantity.
Okay, let's talk about some of the shows. Now, in no particular order of favoritism. Now, I just picked them off the website. But the first on my list is The Little Bit You Can Do, written by Lewis Morrow, directed by Nick Hazel.
Right, and that actually, this is the second year in a row that we've done one of Lewis's shows. He is a new young playwright here in town. He had a show at the Fringe last year. This is a very serious piece. It's about a man who's in prison. He's serving a life sentence for a murder that he says he did not commit. And his wife comes to visit him in prison. He's been in prison for a little while now. And his wife comes to him in prison and basically says, I need you to let me go and live my life. I can't spend the rest of my life waiting for you to get out of prison. So it's a very serious piece, obviously.
Yes, well, does the author have any personal experience in that?
I don't know. He does a lot of he does the things that I have seen have been very serious. He writes a lot about racial issues in the country and justice issues. So I think this is kind of a, I don't know where it comes from, but I think this is a special area of his interest.
It's directed by Nick Hazel.
Right.
Has Nick directed for you before?
He has not, and he was actually in Lewis's show last year, which is what got him as an idea of wanting to direct this year. He came to me and said, I had so much fun being in a show last year, I'd like to try my hand at directing. He's done a little bit of short film work here in Kansas City, but I think this is the first time he's done a play, so he's pretty excited.
Okay, that's one of the presentations. The second one I have on my list, again, in no particular order of favoritism, but we're not ranking them 1 through 6, Bitter
Bittersweet and Strange.
Bittersweet and Strange, excuse me, by Michael, is it Dragan?
Uh-huh. This is actually a very funny show. That when I first started reading it, I thought there's no way he's going to make this premise work. It is about Belle and the Beast from Beauty and the Beast. About 6 months to a year has passed, and the fairy tale is over, to say the least. And it's about what happens when these two people that didn't really know each other and kind of rushed into marriage marry and then find out that life is not, doesn't always turn out the way. It's not always happily ever after, let's put it that way.
Well,
so
nothing is.
No. It's like I said, when I first read it, I thought, this isn't going to work. And it is so funny and so clever. And I think this is the first thing Michael's ever had produced. And it's very funny
oh, sure.
little play.
Things don't ever go smoothly. I, for instance, don't like to go to the grocery store at 2 in the morning. I'd rather be sleeping. Some people do that.
They do. That's why they have 24-hour markets.
Directed by E.M.
M. Loper.
M. Loper? Okay.
Right.
M. Loper.
Yeah, and she's also somebody that has been in a number of the plays, the 6x10 plays over the years, and wanted to direct this year, so I said, sure.
Okay, she'll be directing that. The next title on my list, A Man's Musical. Do we have to have equal time and have a woman's musical as well?
Well, perhaps. This is by Phil Keenan, who has done lots and lots of theater around town. He has his own production company, does lots of shows at the Fringe Festival. And this is a comedy as well. This is about a young man who is going to sit and watch a football game with his girlfriend's father. And it's the first time they've really spent time together, so he's very nervous about this experience. And even though they're watching a football game, the conversation turns to musicals. And the father's very strict definition of what's a man's musical and what is not a man's musical. And without giving away too much, we do end up reenacting a portion of West Side Story during the show, because that is the father's idea of a man's musical.
But it's West Side Story is loosely based on Romeo and Juliet.
I know. He likes the fact that they fight. That there's a rumble and that they fight.
They fought in Romeo and Juliet too, but it was a romance.
So it's very funny.
Okay, I suppose think Home Improvement or maybe the Frasier Show or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's they're down in his man cave and you just have to see it.
Okay, A Man's Musical by Phil Keenan. Phil Keenan, directed by Barbara Nichols.
And it's interesting. She and Phil are friends from way, way, way back. She did not know he had submitted a play, so she read these six shows as a potential director blind, and that was the show she wanted to do. And it was, by this good friend that she didn't even know had submitted a play. So
A Man's Musical is directed by a woman. How ironic about that. The next one on my list, Cornered, by Aaron Scully.
This is the first time he's had a show at our festival. This is another serious one. This is about two guys who were bunkmates in a rehab facility a year earlier than the show takes place. And the action of the show is them meeting up again, a random meeting a year later. One of them has successfully stayed clean. The other one not so successfully and is kind of fallen on old hard times. And it's about the two of them talking and the one that stayed clean kind of asking what's happened and why the guy has gone back to his former ways and trying to help him. But of course, as is usually the case in those situations, the person has to be ready to be helped.
The challenge to these, and I'll make this comment based on what we have so far, they seem complicated topics, but yet they only have 10 minutes. How are they easily able to condense these down?
Well, the reason why these people got picked is because they did do that. And that's one of the real trick to 10-minute plays is knowing, having the right subject matter and finding the piece of it to put into a 10-minute play. I always tell folks that the way I can tell a good 10-minute play is based on how it ends. because if it just kind of stops, that means the playwright didn't know what they were, why they were writing the play. And so the ending, if it either, it can be either way. It can be, it ties everything up nicely, or it makes you think more. But when you, if you get to the end and you go, oh, I know what they were saying, I know what the point of this was, that's a successful 10-minute play.
Next on my list, Route 84, House Fire by Jesse Salisbury.
And this one is very serious. It is about a house fire that has occurred, and the entire family has perished in the fire except for one child. And the play is the fire marshal interviewing the surviving child and trying to determine what happened. So that's
a sober, a sober topic. Again, I would think that would be difficult to condense to 10 minutes.
Yeah, and what's the interesting thing about this one is that little nepotism here. The director is Craig Aikman, who's directed for us.
Oh, he
before.
Put down his football and microphone to this
and he, his wife and daughter are the two characters in the play. So it's kind of interesting. I'm anxious to see it. I haven't been to a rehearsal yet, so I'm anxious to see how. They're not related in the play. In the play, it's a fire marshal and the victim. But I'm anxious to see how they interact.
And my little joke aside, it's not Craig Aikman who was quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys.
No.
Although that's the exact same spelling in there.
He could. He's welcome to come direct for
us. Oh, I'm sure he has stories he could tell.
Well, I'm sure that's true.
I'm sure he could. No, the last play I have on my list, Best Friend Love by Emma Carter. This never works.
Well,
Best
actually,
Friend Love never works.
This is a very topical show. It's about two women that are best friends. And the younger one is met a guy on one of these dating apps. And she is trying to decide, I won't get too graphic here, but she's trying to decide what kind of picture she should send him.
Oh.
And, you know, it's actually very funny. And I could tell it was aimed at a younger demographic than myself when I read it, but it's very funny in terms of dating in today's world, which, you know, is a very different experience than
this millennial generation does everything online these days. I work for the university, and they listen to lectures online. They do all their notes online. They'd rather watch it later than watch it in person.
Oh, yeah.
I've always found that interesting. And they date and make dining plans the exact same way.
Yeah.
So I'm not really surprised that this topic came up.
Yeah. So it's like I said, it's a very contemporary story, and it's funny. Although it would be probably rated R if we had those sorts of ratings. So, and obviously the show about the house fires are pretty intense. Kind of.
Sounds like you have an eclectic mix of serious and comedic and thought-provoking shows as well.
Yeah, we do. And actually, one of the challenges for me always is deciding the order to put the shows in, to not make things too jarring, but also to have a flow for the evening that kind of works, because you don't really want to go from something very funny to something really deadly serious. And so that's always a little bit of the puzzle is the order to put the six shows in.
Oh, sure. You can watch these shows and judge for yourself beginning this Friday, December the 8th at 7:30, Saturday the 9th at 7:30, Sunday the 10th, a matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Barn Players of Mission, Kansas, located at 6219 Martway in Mission, Kansas. If you need to MapQuest things, again, online.
There you go.
You need the zip code 66202 and the number to call for more information, 913-432-9100. That's the 6x10 Play Festival. But this isn't the only news that the barn players are making. This is the last show they will have in this particular space before they move on to other to explore other worlds.
It is. This is our very, that Sunday matinee will be our very last show in the space on Martway. It will be a very bittersweet day in a lot of ways. We have a lot of great memories there, but the landlords have other plans for the building. So we are moving on, and we are crossing the state line, to the chagrin of some and the delight of others. But we're moving, and we're going to be doing all of our main stage shows at the Arts Asylum, which is at 9th and Harrison, if people are not familiar where that is. It's been around for a few years. They offer studio space for artists. They have a newly renovated theater that's just absolutely gorgeous. The Black Repertory Company produces their stuff there. And so that will be our home in 2018.
Yeah, the Barn was always known for its musicals. At least it seems like the most, if I can say it, financially successful shows you had were always your musicals. Is that going to continue?
Oh yeah. We're going to do 4 musicals next year, just like we always do. We're doing Chicago, Urinetown, Bridges of Madison County, and Rock of Ages. So again, a pretty eclectic season. But Chicago and Urinetown are both shows that are often requested from us, and we generally in the past have tried not to do repeat shows we've done, but since we were in a new space, we thought we would do 2 real crowd pleasers to start the season, and then Bridges of Madison County, it's the first time a community theater's done the show here in Kansas City. I'm not sure about Rock of Ages, whether it's been done or not, but so a very eclectic season. And then we're also doing 1 play, Torch Song Trilogy, and that'll be in the summertime. We always do our plays in the summer, but so, and then we'll do our 6x10, of course, there too.
Are you going to do the kids' things as well?
The kids' things are not going to be at the Arts Asylum. They're going to be at St. Pius over at 55th and Woodland, Woodson, I believe, but we're hoping someday to consolidate all back in one space, but with just scheduling, we could not make it work this year. So
I saw one of your presentations of the youth show. It was jam-packed in there.
Oh, yeah. The kid stuff always draws really well. And we have one, our Barn Kids, which is like 4th to 6th graders. That's the real little ones. And then we have Barn Junior, which is our high schoolers. But they both draw. Yes, those parents and grandparents and mothers and fathers are always there. So I always say it's good. If even if they don't become performers in the future, we're developing audience members because we're developing people who appreciate coming to see a musical. So.
Yeah, the Barn is, 61 years old now?
Yes. We've been around a long time. And I don't know exactly how many locations we've been in, but we certainly moved before. And before we moved to the location on Martway, we were actually an itinerant company for a few years.
Oh, yes.
And having to do every show in a different spot. And we were kind of fearing that was going to be our fate in 2018 when we were looking for space, but we finally found the Arts Asylum. And so for the most part, it's going to be our home. Like I said, the kid stuff will be elsewhere, but we'll be back into one space, and that was our real goal.
If people are wondering, it actually did start in a barn. I was shown that barn, Lowy's, many years ago. But at the time I auditioned for my first show at the Barn, it was at Johnson County Community College, where they had a very successful run at the time.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember the advertising slogan for that year, "The Barn comes of age this year," which meant, of course, it turned 21. So go for yourself. How many years ago that was? I was a very young person then. But the Barn became of age that year. The Barn did some daring shows there at Johnson County Community College.
Yeah, we've always really prided ourselves on doing the shows that we wanted to do. And that was actually, when we were looking for a new location, that was actually part of the issue we had, was that some of the locations we looked at were like, well, now you can't do this and you can't do this and you can't say these words and all that kind of stuff. And if you look at theater today, when you start imposing those kind of restrictions, it really limits your ability to do a lot of more current shows. And so that was one of the things when we were looking for, is it was very important to find a space where we could do the shows that we wanted to do.
It depends on the audience you're going for, of course.
Right.
Some audience welcomes that.
I think our audience has been, we've done some daring shows the last few years and pushed the boundaries. And
The Graduate was
been one.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And we did Hair, which is, even though it's, I think, 50 years old, it's still daring to a lot of people.
Oh, sure.
And for the most part, our audience has come along with us, and I always have kind of the same motto for them. If you don't like this show, the next one might be more your cup of tea.
The 6x10 Festival begins this Friday, December the 8th at 7:30 p.m. Performances continue on Saturday the 9th, also at 7:30 p.m., an afternoon matinee on Sunday the 10th at 2 o'clock p.m., where they will officially lower the curtain on the Barn's Mission, Kansas residency period, but somehow you'll put up a barn in the new location where you're going at the Arts Asylum.
Downtown Kansas City, so.
You'll have to have a little drawing of a barn on the door or something.
Well, we will. Our theme for next year is New Directions, and it's a barn with a little weather vane on top. Right. So, you know, we're heading to a new direction physically, and hopefully always new directions artistically.
Well, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Lynn Reddick, he is the assistant artistic producer of the Barn Players. He's on the committee that helps pick these plays and a member of the board of the Barn. The 6x10 Play Festival. Again, if you joined us late, 6 plays, no longer than 10 minutes, a short break between each one. Is there an intermission somewhere in the middle?
After three.
And they will, if you go on the Sunday afternoon performance, they will close down for the final performance. Anything planned special there?
Tears. I think that's all.
No champagne, no party? No.
Well, they did a, after the Sister Act, which was our last musical in the space, they did a party after that was over, since that was our last big main stage one there. But I think we're getting so close to the moving date that I think we're just going to kind of end the show and run out the door and lock it up, I think.
I understand. Well, thank you for being with us. Lynn Reddick helps pick these plays. It's probably the hardest job he has at the barn all year. Yes, it reads so many plays. You read 40 of them?
Is that 50.
50? Oh, my goodness. Okay. You probably burned out on plays by the time you finish.
I by the time we're done, I'm ready to be done. By the last few of those, we're dragging.
Say hello to your President Vita for me.
I definitely will.
All right. Thanks so much. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. We'll have great jazz this afternoon. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.